Rape has nothing to do with sex. Rape has to do with power. It's a sexual act, of course, but it has more to do with power and violence. And when we get along talking, I've gotten this sort of theory that I think in one sense, because of our society's stress on violence and power, it is a natural outgrowth. This is my specific story. I'll just cap it a little. We lived in, I suppose it wasn't really a high crime area of Los Angeles, but it was
depends
in Los Angeles.
Depends on who you talk to.
Yeah, it was a middle-class neighborhood, mixed neighborhood, with large 1904 big homes, but it was a transitional place and was also very near some very rough neighborhoods. And we were renovating an old house that had been really beat up. My son and I had been out to a football game at California Lutheran College. We came back with our parents-in-law. They dropped us off. We went in about 10:15 at night. He'd gone to Las Vegas to research a short story with a friend. And
to a convention.
To a convention. It's a short story. Actually, it was about naval flyers in Las Vegas. But I put my son to bed. He wasn't asleep. I took a bath, and in the bath, I heard some strange noises. And being the only adult in the house, I thought I would probably normally say, David, please investigate. But so I got out of the tub and got dressed, and as I opened the bathroom door, a man was standing there. And he first said he wanted money, and then he pushed me down on the bed, and he raped me. It was a situation where I struggled at first, and then he told me, I have a gun, I've killed a woman before tonight, if you keep doing what you're doing, I'll do it to you too, and so on. And so I, intelligent person that I was, thought I want to live more. And the interesting thing after coming out of the whole incident is it was more to me a facing of death, of imminent death. And the rape was part of that. And I didn't expect that about rape. I mean, everything I thought about rape was like it was going to be terrible. I'd grown up fearing rape. I'd grown up male violence to me, either on dates or, you know, on the street or something. I'd had that fear. But it wasn't just rape. It was what would happen to me afterwards. When he was done with me, what would he do? And so what happened was, and I didn't know what I was doing. I was responding to this event in my life, this trauma in my life, with who I was. And consequently, I talked the whole time whenever I could. And I kept saying, he'd talk to me, like, oh, I want you, I need you, and everything. I'd say, no, you don't want me, you just want a woman to do violence to, all these things. And then I was thinking, I might make this man angrier, and he may beat me up. So I didn't think through a lot of things. There wasn't time. I just responded with who I was. There are many different types of rapists. Mine happened to be what they call a remorseful rapist. It's often a man who has a very low self-definition, and he comes in and a rapist often is that anyway, but he comes into the situation, he uses you, and then he's sorry. He says, I'm very sorry, I have somebody's making me do this, and so on, and etc. So it turned out he did not beat me up, he just forced himself on me. And then when he left, he had gotten me under his power enough, so I was feeling sorry for him. And I was saying, well, are you sure you're going to be all right? Things like this. So then he left, and I went out into the hall, and I said, Aaron, and he said, yeah, he was awake. He knew something had been happening. And
who's Aaron?
My son, who's 10. And he had started to come down the ladder. It was a really fixed house, so there was no stairs. He was coming down the ladder.
Can I interrupt?
No.
Well,
yes.
One thing he got you to do too at the end there was to promise not to tell anybody.
Oh, that's another thing. He didn't want me to tell anyone, and I said, are you kidding? You've broken into my house. I'm going to have to talk to my husband. He says, no, don't talk to your husband. He'll go to the police. I don't want anyone to know. This is just, you know, just don't tell anyone. And he wouldn't leave. And I couldn't promise him because I took this, you know, you do strange things, but I feel my word is good. This man had broken into my house, And he'd forced himself on me, and I was worried about my word back to him. If I just said, sure, sure, go away, go away. I didn't want to say, I won't tell anyone. So I kept saying, well, I'm going to have to tell my husband, and I'm going to have to go to a counselor. And so finally he said, okay, you can go to a counselor. It's a strange situation. And then he disappeared out of my life. The police have not found him. I looked at mug books. I did a lot of the routines and so on, but he probably will never be found. So I called Aaron down, we went across the street to a neighbor's, and then I said, a man has broken my house, and he raped me, and they let me in their door, and they said, we're calling the police. And my first response was, no, he said not to. He'll come back. And then I got really afraid, and they said, we're calling the police. And I said, yeah, you're right. It took the police an hour and a half to get there. They consider a rape a crime that has been completed. It's not in process. And they don't want you to do it. You have to just sit and wait for the police to come. And so...
Well, you reported it on the phone.
As reported already it on the phone. Happened. Like, if I had said, there's a man in my house, they would have been there like that, with the helicopter and everything. But since the neighbor called and said, my neighbor's been raped, the crime is over, the person's left, so then they put it on their call sheet in LA to be a little slower, and it was very difficult and angering to be sitting waiting. This thing had happened, and I kept waiting and waiting. Finally, it was a rape crisis council hotline. I got the police to come, and then they said, you need to go to the emergency room and need to be examined, and I had to take medicine for VD and stuff. But I hadn't even thought of VD. I don't think of it. So that's the capsule.
Did they help you know what to do with it? That you say the rape crisis center counselor. How did you get in touch with that person?
My neighbor had the name, and she just called right away. And it was interesting, in all of LA, the only crisis center that was working was Pasadena, which was 30 miles away. But the police were, another thing, I didn't think the police would be very supportive. They were very supportive. And one police officer said to me, in our books, rape is a violent crime only below murder. And in the past, it hasn't been viewed that way. And I felt very supported by the police. A man and a woman police officer came. Police officers came, and so I didn't feel a lot of the problems that have been. I suppose the police, you know, treat you brutally, and they weren't. They were very supportive. At least I was lucky. And first response was disbelief. This couldn't have happened. And along with the disbelief came almost hysteria that I'm alive. I could not believe when that door shut. I have two images still in my mind, opening the bathroom door and the man standing there, and when he went out the back door and the door was closed and I locked it, and I was alive. And so even to this day, I think that feeling of just being alive has outweighed even some of the other feelings of total destruction of my personality. Immediately after the rape, there's a lot of adrenaline running. I couldn't sleep that day, that night. It was early morning. And it wasn't until 2 days later till I finally cried. Now, I called some people. My friends were great. And a lot of things happened in this situation, in this trauma, that I have read afterwards were the right thing. I immediately went to my friends. I immediately talked to my friends. And I didn't cover it up. And they immediately were supportive of me as a victim, rather than I caused it. And that was, afterwards I think about it, I said that was pretty daring, you know. But it wasn't, because I went so immediately after it happened, I was so high on being alive that it was easy. And also the way I handle tension sometimes is with humor. So I walked in and I'd say, hey, guess what happened to me last night? And then they said, my God. And then I could talk. But the way I'd introduce it was humorously. Then they helped me just blither. I mean, I just talked. And it's almost like verbal diarrhea, you know, because it's so much trauma. Just, and everything comes out like, why didn't I do this? Why didn't I do it? And I think the best thing that happened was my friends. They were there. And they listened. And they kept listening over and over again. And they kept... I had good friends, but I didn't expect them to be that good. It was trusting. That was one thing. Another thing was talking to David. for me, I gotta watch that, I could talk a lot. But for me, rape is a total destruction of your personality. And rape is not just a strange man breaking into your house. It can happen on a date, it can happen in a family, it can happen to men, it can happen in many different ways. It's when you are used where you have no say whatsoever. So there's all sorts of types of rape. Mine happened to be sort of a traditional kind, you know. But David used an a thought, because I couldn't figure out. I said, why is this so traumatic? Why can't I stop crying? Or why do I feel so terrible about this? And he said, you know, that instant, you know, like when you think you're going to have a car accident, or maybe a bicycle, you're going to hit a tree. It's an imminent thing where your adrenaline just goes through you, and you're just, and it happens, and all of a sudden you're just real shaky afterwards. He says, the rape was sort of like you had about 20 minutes of that kind of adrenaline, because you were with this man laying on you, you know, forcing you, and you were expecting death any minute for about 20 minutes. He says, so you got a lot of adrenaline, a lot of just feelings that are still just coming out. And I kept saying, well, you know, why is this so heavy? You know, it just happens 20 minutes. And that made a lot of sense to me, because you're powerless. You're totally, totally powerless. And it's like, not only have you lost your power, but you've lost your self-image. You've lost, well, parts of yourself that you thought no one could ever touch. And that part is hard to understand, you know, when I guess the part that's hard to understand is how private that really is, and how important that privacy is, that even your parents don't know this part of yourself, or don't know that. And it's like everything has been touched. And one of the things I wanted to do immediately was take a bath. I wanted to, and I had kept my robe and I had an old t-shirt. And I went and stayed with a friend. And I was telling her about it. And she says, is that what you're wearing? I says, yeah, I didn't even notice. And she took it. She gave me another robe and she threw it away. She says, you don't need to keep that. And I, you know, you lose. Yeah, I don't. I didn't get rid of that.
You know, I'm surprised I didn't throw that away.
So yeah. And it was also strange things, like he had just given me for Christmas new sheets for our bed. You know, it was about the second or third time I really think we put them out there. And then it's sort of like, oh shoot, but I kept the sheets. So like, those are important sheets. And, I don't know what else to go on to right now. I think the main thing that I wanted to say to you is that it's not something that you really can prepare for. But if something like this happens to you, that it's trusting your friends and immediately talking about it. Because people we've talked to since said the most important thing about this is if you hold it in and you don't tell someone, it's sort of like it starts to fester and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it starts to, can't pop the boil, I guess. It's very difficult. And then you have to clean out all the stuff that's been accrued to it. Whereas in my case, because I think he works for Lutheran Brotherhood, so his days are very free and open. So like he runs his own, you know, he decides when he's gonna have his appointments. So we went and stayed with friends, he took Aaron to school, he came back home and said to me, this is in the week following, what do you want to do? And I says, I can't think beyond the next minute. I mean, I just was at that point. I couldn't think beyond a minute, then it wasn't beyond an hour, and I couldn't plan tomorrow. I mean, I just couldn't handle it. And so he usually gave me a back rub, and I just talked, and then I cried. And then one day, we were out driving on Melrose in L.A., and I couldn't even keep my eyes open because there was too much coming in. I couldn't emotionally take, I said, I can't open my eyes. I'll go crazy if I open my eyes. I can't take anything more in emotionally.
And I can't take the vibration of the car.
The car moving,
so
even.
Stop.
You know, just like, I mean, so one of the things that happened is I gave myself permission to be crazy. And I did, I was crazy. I mean, there was one time we were driving back from Northern California, and the closer we got to LA, I said, I can't go back. I can't go to LA. I can't go to that house. And so he said, okay. And it happened to be in Fresno. And there's a park there, so we pulled into this park in Fresno. And I lay in the back seat of the car in a fetal position. I said, I can't go any further. And he says, okay. So Aaron went and played on the swings, and I just talked. About 2 hours later, I felt able to go on. And it's amazing how that worked. It helped. I mean, I didn't have a lot of feelings that I shouldn't be doing this. I mean, I had him, but I didn't let him put me down. I just said, this was a bad experience. And I really let myself be crazy. But friends helped.
Can I double back to when you said, you know, you really felt a need to keep your word. Here's a total stranger who's just abused her, and she feels with him a need to keep her word, not to tell, you know, if she's not going to tell, not to tell. What is that power of not telling? You know, when you've been involved in an incident, marginal incident, if not a full rape incident, and somebody puts pressure on you, don't tell, don't tell. I wonder, you know, if several haven't experienced something close. What is that that doesn't
Well, that's
tell?
Power. That's, I mean, the whole thing about the rape is power. It's that, in my case, you'll have to talk about yourselves, but in my case, with this person, that was his power over me, I think. And for me to actually agree to that was again being succumbing to his power verbally.
And then I hear you saying that as you've been able to tell with David, to talk with David, as you were able to tell with a friend, mm-hmm. that the release, the opening of yourself again to life began to occur,
yeah.
that it was in the telling that you did.
Yeah, I think one of the things that happened was, it had happened to me, so it was almost cataloged along with everything else, from grocery shopping to the football game. I mean, this happened. And my mind hadn't realized how terrible things were or how bad it was or something. And so in the telling and having someone say, oh, he did that, he said that, you know, it was that sort of like, oh. Then I could stop and I could rehear. If someone had told me that, I would say, oh, no. But I had become... It had become normal because it had been in my normal life, and
well,
it wasn't normal.
We instantly made the decision to just tell everybody, and at some point, at a couple points, I sort of made a decision to sort of be public relations about it.
Yeah, he was
in terms of it, you know, like you've got your parents and your brothers and sisters and all these people. If something really good happened, you would call, or if you had a child, for example, you'd call. So if you had a major disaster, it's almost as if you don't call, it gives you a burden. And here I said, and here's another burden that we have, and it takes effort to call them and let them know, but it took more effort. There were some places where we decided out of discretion
like
not to tell people. And the small places where we didn't tell people what happened exactly, it took a lot more effort on our part. And on her
to keep
part,
a secret.
And really slowed down the process of getting back to normalcy.
And another thing too is the time. I mean, this was September 15th, and I didn't basically we put our house up for sale in December. That's 3 months. We lived with friends for 4 months. We're in the process of moving to another town. This is not a little thing, you know, as far as emotional trauma happens. And oh, another thing that I wanted to add in here. Right after the rape happened, and I hadn't really gotten into my really depressed self, my mind went to all the times that I remember feeling the same feeling, which was totally used. My opinion was worth nothing. And I went back to feelings about anger to my dad for times when he wouldn't listen, to angers to David when I felt like I didn't have a say. In a sense, I felt like I'd been raped many times in my mind. And I said, this isn't any different, except this is physically. And a lot of the same feelings, all wrapped up. And I,
One of the things I felt like it did to you was that we've all got places in ourselves where we feel angry or don't feel good about ourselves. And this was sort of like a personal war that came along. And what it did is it took all the places that she ever felt bad about herself forever, from when she was 3 to 39. And it brought him back to life. You know, like all the times that she felt bad when she was 12 years old that she thought she'd forgotten. You know, and all of a sudden, they were alive in her and just, you know, totally, she was crazy in that sense, temporarily, because those were all activated. Yeah. But you want to go?
I just was wondering, like, how did you tell your kid, your son? Like, what did you say to him?
What happened was, is I went to the ladder and I said, Aaron. He said, yeah. And I said, come down here right now. And he came down, and we didn't say a word. We went to the neighbors. Then he was in the room when I told the neighbors. So he heard me. And then I turned to him, and I said, did you know what's going on? And he said, then he said, I heard you scream. I came down the ladder, and I heard something about a gun. He says, but I didn't hear anything after that. So it was from that point on he heard what was... In other words, I guess he heard because he was standing right with me.
Directly.
Yeah. And then, see, he had a lot of guilt that I called the counselor. I says, my son was in the house when I was raped. What do I look for? I mean, because he's going to have feelings, and I'm not going to know what to say, you know, or what to look for. And she says, one of the things he's going to feel, even though he's little, is he's going to feel like, why didn't I protect my mother? And so about 3 days later, he went to school a couple days later, and then about 3 days later, we were coming home, and he just was crying. And he said, I should have come down. You and I together, we could have gotten him out of there. You know, and so I knew this was coming. I knew his guilt, and so then was coming. And then he talked about how he just felt so bad he couldn't help me. And then we tried to reassure him that he did the right thing to get out of there, you know, to just disappear and not be involved.
About it.
But so it was a long transition. It got to the place, though, about 3 months later, he says, do we have to still talk about this? You know, so he was involved a lot in just while we talked.
In terms of the explicit rape and stuff, we just told him everything that happened. Like, we've raised him feeling that a lot of what adults don't tell children, under the ruse that the child isn't ready for it, is really that an adult just isn't ready to tell a child that. So, you know, in terms of what happens sexually and sorting out the confusion of, well, now is this violence and not sex and all that, we just said that, you know, he didn't have trouble sorting that out because he knew at least that he knew all the information. And so, you know, he knew as much as everybody else.
Was he there when I told the police officers the story? Or was he at school that...
I can't remember.
No, I think he was at school that day. You know, to tell you the truth, I've talked about it with him so many times, but your question is a good one because I don't know if I ever sat down and talked about it straight from the beginning to the end. Did you know this? Did you know that? Do you know this? I just assumed because he was there when I was telling the neighbors, you know, it's a good question. Anything else? Just, you know, say whatever you want to say. Also, we wanted to ask about time, too. We didn't know, you know, what your feelings were. It's kind of a heavy topic to talk about, and sometimes you get like, this is enough. But
maybe you have some questions that relate to some of your own experience of similar concern or worry or fear.
It's kind of hard to talk about. We did a session at California Lutheran College with some students, and there were two or three people that were quite active in the discussion. But later we found out, you know, that some people didn't say anything. It had something similar happen, but they just didn't want to talk about it. So it's that kind of thing where it has to be in your own space, in your own time.
Mark?
I think one of the things that is really an interesting thing to talk about in relationship to this, if you don't have any questions, is about men and sex and violence. And that was one of the things he's reflected on. And I don't know if you'd be interested in that, but I think it's interesting.
Well, I'd like to... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just wondering, like, how did it change your relationship at all, bring you closer?
A lot of times, it made us much more close. But I wanted to say also that often if a couple does not talk about it, there's a real high percentage rate of divorce. And there's a real pulling apart because there has not been the intimacy of just sharing. And also, he did not blame me. That's another thing. There's a lot of blame in a marriage relationship, too, and there was not a blame here. I think it took us 4 or 5 days before we made love. And I even to this day, I still have flashes. And I'm more guarded, maybe. But I'm much more appreciative of him as a person and the love that our relationship has. So it changed us in that. Wham! You know, what's important in our life, you know, is each other. And so we became more tender in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want to?
Well, I would sort of like to take about 5 minutes or so to say some of my own stuff. On that particular question, I would just second what you said.
But it's hard not to blame all men and, you know, to really...
You want to follow up on that, Martha, a little bit?
I think one of the things that happened in our relationship that when you get, like, we're in our late 30s, you know, and you've got a job and stuff, and so the man is saying, well, you know, my family is the most important thing in my life, and he's at his job from 9 to 10, you know, he's gone all day, and so the family is the most important thing in his life, but in fact, he doesn't see him very much. And we were in that sort of situation. We were busy working, and there was not much time for our relationship. And then all of a sudden, this little personal war comes across, and there are some major wounds to heal. And it was a place where it just stopped us dead in our tracks. And the job, you know, all of a sudden, I sort of had to take that rhetoric about, well, if I love my family and they really are first, for the next couple months, I need to spend the most time with them.
That meant a lot to me, because if he'd gone off to work, I had such a low image that he could say, I love you, I have to go to work. My feeling would have been he was abandoning me. And the fact that he said, I need to go to work, but if you need me, I'll stay. And I could say, stay, and he would, was really a fantastic thing to happen.
And
that was a real risk he took.
Yeah, and so like it was the sort of thing where that ended up costing us money. You know, so I'm sitting there, well, and it cost us money. The other thing that also happened is that she's more organized than I am. She runs, you know, all of a sudden our household was running as a team. And I
dropped out.
I didn't have any teammate. I had an invalid to take care of. And we no longer had a house to live in because our house, we didn't want to live. We could have, when she went to our neighbors, the neighbors had bars on their house and they had a dog in there and they had a gun. And so we could either have gone back to our house and said, well, we'll fortify it because this is our dream home and we want to live here forever. But we said, hey, you know, so we're all of a sudden instant refugees, you know, so like where every meal comes from, how do we get clean clothes, how do I get my 10-year-old to school, you know, all those logistical things, it just took a ton of effort. And so, you know, it was that sort of thing that in terms of just also recovering from the wound, but somehow trying to restructure your life. Now, and that can happen differently in different ways, but that's part of what it took in our situation.
He also, your anger.
Oh, well.
He wanted to kill somebody.
You know, if you
he
live
walked
with,
around the house with his bat.
If you live with a person who happens that, for me, I entered in a different place. Like, I got a phone call in Las Vegas. I had been at a military convention and had been out drinking a whole lot and gotten to bed real late. And I got a call early in the morning that was just, it was like a TV movie where the phone rings when it's not supposed to because you have four drunk men who've just gone to bed, and none of them want to get a call. And so you know right away that something has happened to somewhere, and it turned out to be, you know, it turned out to be...
You're the lucky one.
That I was the lucky one, and I got home, and I was initially shocked, but also just initially angry, just really, really angry.
Do you have any guilt about not being
there?
He did.
I think that what happens is that to me, it's a real personal crime. You know, and so the way that the guilt, I didn't feel any guilt about being in Las Vegas. I didn't feel any guilt about being drunk. I didn't feel any guilt about being sort of at a military thing where they had some striptease dancers and that, you know, like I didn't feel guilty about that. The way that I felt guilty was about the pattern of life that I was living that really wasn't putting my family in in the proper place.
That's in a sense you weren't there mentally.
So like in a sense it could have happened any night. Like I happened to be away in one place, but I was away from my family a lot. See, and that was, so I think that the guilt, you know, I think that, that the spouse gets some guilt, but it might not necessarily be where you think it's going to be. But when I came home, I was just angry. And here she was so ecstatic to be alive, she wasn't angry with this jerk that raped her. You know, and so
and
I...
I'm an angry person, so he says, I can't believe you're not angry. He says, you're angry about everything.
So, it, the, for me, the first, what I had to do initially was just sort of step on that anger. And the first week was real easy because, you know, if you, if there's a major disaster, it's like a forest fire. You know, almost, you've got all this adrenaline to go out and fight it. If there's a flood, you know, a major disaster sort of brings that out naturally. So for the first week, it was real easy. But the second
week... Well, it wasn't
easy. It wasn't easy, but I had a lot of energy to do it. The second week was when I had to make a decision about really taking the time to put my life together and our lives back together and continuing to do the things that she still needed. And also then, one of the things that happens if you, if a woman that you love gets raped is that you don't know what to do with that anger. The guy's gone, you know, and you'd like to kill him. I mean, an issue of forgiveness is a real, I mean, this is the first time in my life, well, not the first time in the life that personally I felt I could have killed somebody and had no remorse. You know, and so, and still, I don't know right now, but, you know, if I had seen the guy, I'd probably, you know, it would just set me berserk. And so some of that anger is an issue.
He really did go around the house with a baseball bat. When we tried to go back to the house and sleep there, any little noise, I'd say, David.
Yes, sir.
And then he'd do the rounds of the house. And at first I thought he was afraid, too, because he picked up the baseball bat. And I said, you know, did you, you know, he says, no, everything's tight, everything's locked and everything. And he says, but I wish you were there. And I, that's the first inkling that I got about how angry he was. Because I knew he was angry, but I didn't really realize how.
Part of what happens then, too, is that there's a later stage. It's called technically delayed rage, where I sort of went crazy. I mean, it was just sort of like I would start to cry because I didn't. I had all this intense anger that had nowhere to go, and it just it made me a little crazy for a while too. And you know, like you're standing in a supermarket and you hear some guy try to pick up on a woman in the line. You know, and you're ready to punch him in the mouth because he's really just being abused. You know, why doesn't he just leave her alone? And there are these sort of things that you get really sensitive to a lot of the ways that in our culture people sort of are potentially abusive to each other. And it also, so that's one thing that, and I went to a counselor too, just to sort of help sort out my own feelings about what was happening. And here's somebody who really has done, has taken away a lot of the things that are most precious to me and also done violence to the person that I most love. And I just can't get back, and it's driving me crazy that I'd like to kill that guy. It has to be dealt with. And it's just, it's, that's messy. It's just...
Could you say something about, you know, you made the quick association with military, stripteaser, and then your wife being raped. But maybe you ought to talk a little bit about how those relate to you and relate in your mind. Do you understand what I mean?
Okay. No,
is that too big a jump? You were talking about men.
Oh, okay. I think the thing that it raised for me is I think that men, and I think our society, and this is maybe a wrap that is real long, but our society doesn't end up equating sexuality with intimacy. And just everywhere you want to sit, sexuality is sort of consumer-oriented, or it's very sort of sensually consumption.
Like Black Velvet, Feel the Black Velvet.
And so the particular setting that I was in,
sex.
You know, like you've got a bunch of military guys, and a lot of them are away from their wives. They're nice guys from Iowa who've been in the Army, and they're good veterans, and they're in the Kiwanis, and they, you know, they've got teenage daughters in college. I mean, these are good American veterans, and they get all together, and because they don't know what to do, they get a lot of beer and have a stripteaser. I mean, it's really sad in one sense that it's sort of a, I think somehow, I don't know what it's like to really grow up now sexually, because I'm 39 years old. I grew up, I was younger. Well, no, I'm still growing up, I suppose. But what it put me in touch with is is the way that males in my age group grew up and did not really know how to be intimate and communicate with their feelings. And the ways in which a lot of what we do in society and a lot of the ways that we relate sexually are not really healthy ways sexually. I think our relationship sexually was not... I did not have any feelings that the rape had dirtied you or made you unclean or taken away anything in our relationship, because I had equated our relationship with intimacy. And so that, you know, that didn't really affect our sexual relationship in that way.
That's another thing that...
So I don't know, that's sort of rambling, but...
To me, sex is always related to intimacy. It is not related to abuse. It is not related to violence. If he's angry at me, he'll withdraw and be totally away from me. He will not. He has never used me sexually. Okay, that happened once on a date, sort of, but not completely. But I haven't really experienced that from a male. So it was very difficult for me in my mind to put together violence with aggressive sexual act. Because David's violence to me often was just total coldness and withdrawal. So it was still the use of sex. I mean, they're still sort of saying, forget you, you know, I don't want to relate to you when we've had fights and stuff. But it was a real switch, and it was very hard for me to integrate. Because here to me, sex is gentle and intimate, and here was this person. He was gentle to me. I mean, he forced himself, but I mean, he didn't beat me up and whack me around, and yet he was being so violent. So that was really hard for me to get together in my mind. It still was hard. And it probably would take a long time. Another thing that's happened with this is a lot of people talk to me about people that I've known for years. Say, when I was 12, I was abused by my girlfriend's father. When I was so-and-so this job, I was... I couldn't believe all these people that I've known for so long had these terrible things happen. And when I expressed mine, and this happened to me also.
That was amazing. It sort of lit up this network.
Maybe we can be quiet for a minute and see if anything emerges out of our group. If we could just be still for a minute and reflect on, we've been just impacted by a powerful, powerful human experience. And it takes a little bit to hold that in. Could we just be quiet for a minute and see if something emerges from members of the group? I'm thinking about the fact when I go out of town to Las Vegas or somewhere, my wife has a baseball bat beside her bed. Anybody else have some thoughts?
Like you were saying that he didn't blame you for being raped or anything like that, but sometimes, like, you come home and you tell your husband that you were raped, and they'd say that it was your fault because you're acting a certain way or something like that.
That's where I think you all can be really helpful. Something happened like that where you wouldn't be blaming to someone, because that could be so devastating. You know,
how do you see that, Mark? You want to say some more about that? I'd be interested in how... That sometimes the person who is raped,
did something to cause it.
Yeah, like, say a husband would come home and you'd tell him, and they wouldn't want to have any part of you anymore, because they'd say that you're acting a certain way, and that's why he came on to you.
There's a lot of, that is so true, especially, well, you shouldn't have worn that dress, or you shouldn't have walked that way, or you shouldn't, I mean, there's so many stuff went through my mind like that, like,
they talk about
I could
that
have done
school?
Something different.
You see a lot on TV. I mean, you see, stuff like that on TV.
Sometimes.
How is that, Steve?
I don't know, it's just, that's something that's there. Yeah, if you see any serious shows.
Like, some true stories that they've put into a TV. That's sometimes what happens.
I see that.
And I just remember, I think it was Love Letter Sutton, one of the people on there, she'd been raped, and so her husband was wanted to divorce because he couldn't handle the fact that she had been with someone else.
Mm-hmm. And like they think they're unclean then.
Mm-hmm. A lot of ideas from TV.
Mm-hmm. You say that, you know, your friends were real supportive, but like, did you have any acquaintances, you know, that like used to say hi to you, but now, you know, they just kind of look at you and they don't know what to say, you know,
that
made you feel uncomfortable around them at all or anything?
No, the only person I can think of is two of our neighbors. There's an older couple.
Shows you real friends then, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, it's sort of like, it's very awkward, you know, because you don't know what to say.
Yeah.
I can understand their feeling. And I, you know, sort of, I guess I accepted the fact that I was in need and tough to them because I couldn't minister to them right now. You know, but that was hard because...
Do you know anybody in your school that's been raped?
Yeah.
What happens to her?
A couple months ago in our town there was some raping going on. But I don't know anybody that happened to.
They don't usually tell the names, huh?
Did it
they
happen
don't
in
do
your
it.
School?
Yeah, well, a friend of mine once told me about it, and she had never told anyone. She was drunk when she told me, and she had never told anyone. She still hasn't, and she carries a lot of guilt. It happened like 3 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And she can't tell.
And she hasn't told anyone. Her parents, she didn't tell them. You know, they knew about it because they came home and found her, and stuff, but they never
That's such a great
it.
Thing of trust that she, even if she was drunk, to tell
yeah.
you. I mean, that's super.
Makes you a special person to her.
Yeah.
I didn't, yeah.
You didn't realize how special
you were. It was hard for me to react to her because it just totally took me by surprise. All of a sudden she just started talking about it. I was like, wow. I didn't know how to react to her, what to say back to her.
Well, it's almost like a strange thing that only either happens on TV or elsewhere, and when it's right by you, then you start to get feelings too. At least this is what my friends told me, that it could happen to me.
Yeah.
Did she feel really enclosed and a lot of guilt?
Yeah. She
was she really conscious of herself a lot.
She feels really guilty about it. I don't know. She just
was it in
a lot of anger in her.
Was it? Did somebody break in, or was it in a more quote compromising situation?
Kind of a date. It was someone that she had just been really infatuated with, and he got her really drunk.
Took advantage.
That's another thing where rape can happen in so many different ways, and a date is a very difficult time because people say, well, you went out on the date with him.
That's maybe part of what Mark was saying. You came on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's double guilt. Because, so like, well, I should have been wise enough.
Yeah, she kept saying about how she just, you know, he was just like, wow, I'm with him. You know, and she just thought, well, maybe I shouldn't have done that. You know, she was so caught up in who he was and stuff.
Lisa, did you hear Janet say at all she needed to have someone tell her something? She just needed, Janet needed someone
to tell.
Listen.
Yeah.
And so
that's what
you didn't have to worry about what you would say, would you? You provided
ears.
Isn't
and it was non, what's the word I'm thinking of? When you reject something, I mean, you were open. You weren't saying...
You weren't critical.
Critical, yeah. That's not the word, but that's close.
Bias.
That's very special when someone will try to tell you about a terrible thing in their life like that.
And another thing that's interesting to me, too, is someone might start to say something to you, and they'll start off saying little things, you know, because they don't know if they're going to trust you. If you're not listening, then they don't go further. You know, I found that too with myself. If I start to say something and I feel their defenses go up, you know, so like, I'm not going to work with this. You know. But that's really hard to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have really become involved then. I mean, you're emotionally involved. And you're going to feel some of the pain and some of the fear. I think that's what happened. I got to the place where I was saying, I'm really being mean to my friends because they're starting to be afraid too. They don't need this fear. They don't need to be afraid to be in their home. They don't need this. And yet I kept saying, I have to talk. And then they would say, please tell me. But, you know, I didn't want to share it in some ways because I didn't want them to be as afraid as me.
What do you think about the penalties for rapists now? Has that changed your point of view, like before it happened?
Well, that's really hard. That's hard. There was, when I went down and looked at the mugshots, the police officers who handled rape were also the juvenile part. Files and files of juvenile offenders. And one of the things the guy was really proud of, they had all these pictures of convicted rapists. And there were three boys, all 16, who had caught a girl in an alley and gangbanged her. And they got 64 years in prison. It was the first offense. And my feeling was, their lives are going to be ruined. I mean, my first feeling, but his response was, what did they do to the woman? What did they do to her life? And I thought, so I'm really mixed up because I think they're just boys, 64 years, and they're 16. They're going to be old men. Their life is gone. And yet, at the other hand, I hear things where a person may get 15 years. I say, hey, whoa, you know, that's not enough. So I'm really confused because...
You mean 64 each or 64 each. Again?
What do you feel about the penalties? Do you have an opinion about that?
I don't know, I just think... I don't want any guys to look at me and say, you're racist. But I don't know, I just think that is probably, alongside of murder, I think that is really, really a terrible crime. I think it's just awful to, like you said, to take someone's, that intimate part of someone, you know, that big, that privacy, and just to rip it to shreds. And I, you know, I don't know, you know, like as far as years or whatever, but I, some of the penalties I hear that they give people, is just, it's not enough.
Well,
whether I think death penalty or not, I don't know, I'm still.
Well, it is about as close to death as you can get and not be dead. you want to say?
I just found the interesting thing I found about that is they each got 64 years. I don't know exactly how I agree with that, but I know up in Canada, like we just took a large unit of social on what's called the Young Offenders Act. And what that means is anybody under 18, no matter what they do, can't get any more than 3 years.
That's terrible.
In prison.
I mean, at least I should be in reform school or something.
Yeah.
My feeling is it's there's so many rapists running free that to just get three, that's just a slap.
Yeah, no.
It's like, oh, big deal, you know?
And the thing is, like, they can, if they're good, they can serve a minimum of one third of that.
Mm-hmm. So 1 year, they're out in 1 year.
I don't even have an opinion about that right now because I'm so hot on it. But about actual penalties, I mean, I just can't think on that. But the one of the strategies that some feminist groups have used to get back at rapists,
which
a lot of times the situation occurs, like the woman across our street was...
Another neighbor.
She was raped by a doctor who took her out on a date, and he just gave her some drugs and raped her. All right, well, now she'd gone out on a date. I mean, it was a compromise. She'd gone out on a date, and if you're out on a date, probably in court, it's going to be real hard. So there are some groups that in rape support situations...
If you know the person,
we'll go back and confront that person. And I think there was at least one of these on TV. But they'll go back if it's a... they'll go back and somewhere confront that person.
As a group, a bunch of women, 4, 5, 6, or 7, will go back to
that person. Yeah, will accompany the victim. And then they will just let that victim tell the person who raped her, how she feels, whatever she wants to say in that point. But she's got the support of the group then to at least, you know, get that out. And, and that seems to me, like, I like that idea because it's something that's healthy and it's a way to get back, and also it sort of publicly humiliates this person. Now, whether
try to get him in as public a place as possible.
You know, it's whether the rapist has any ability to understand what he actually did, I don't know. Whether he's just totally sick beyond. But see the, yeah. But anyway, I like that idea, and that's happened sometimes because it helps the victim assume some sense of power. And that's a lot of what rape is about, just real power that men have over women,
or men have
over men, or just, but it's a power issue.
So it gets into the whole thing, because I don't like the death penalty, and I don't like what happens in prisons and things like that, and yet at the same time...
You don't want it out.
Right. I don't want that kind of person around. You know, in Nirvana, everything great would be as if there would be some way to rehabilitate a rapist, you know, but it's very difficult in society to do things like that. And then how do you judge whether the person is going to do it? Or be preventative so there aren't men who need to have power this way. You know?
How old of a person was it?
He was in his 20s. And I erased his face in my mind. I can see him, but I don't remember his face. I don't even know now if I saw him in the lineup, if I could identify him. It was just a...
Maybe that's a gift God gives, that you can erase that identity. So it's an event, not a person.
Yeah. I still feel bad for him, though, too. I feel bad that he was so mixed up that he had to do that to me for his own self. You know, I feel I'm at that place. People have told me I'm going to have to get very angry at the man. I haven't yet. Mm. I feel just the guy was really... I just feel bad that any person would be that place in their life that they would have to do that.
Did he do it for himself, or did he tell you that somebody else told him that he had to do this?
He told me that something he did long ago, someone was making him do this because of something he'd done long ago, and in order to clear some debt or something, he had to do this.
What perception do you have in that? That's fascinating. What made you think that might be the case?
Well, she said something about it before.
And that's what made me start to feel sorry for him, I suppose, mm-hmm. too. But then when I talked to the police officer, he said, that's a typical line, that he's the victim, that someone's making him do it. And therefore, you know, you go along with his victimization, mm-hmm. where in fact it's himself. And he just makes it up. The thing, I still to this day don't know if he had a gun. Because he went back in the kitchen and got something, and he didn't have it in the bedroom when he said he had it. So whether he just went back and got, I don't know what, you know, so that was a lie, maybe. You know, it's like, I don't know. There are things that are, to me, because of a visual person, that the visualizations I remember, but a lot of these things.
Yeah, how many years did that one guy that was with Lisa got?
Your mother remembered.
Oh, he got 19. He pleaded guilty without a trial because there were at least six women to identify.
Yeah.
Karen's cousin was assaulted.
And she screamed and people came running. She would never have...
But he got 19 years total? See, that to me should have been 19 years for each time.
And then he got less because he pleaded guilty.
He had several people that he had...
And the one was... There were several of them hospitalized, and one of them was in intensive care, I mean, critically.
Self-defense teacher.
And only survived because of it.
Well, that's one of the things the police officer said to me, is that it was one of the best things to do is to not resist. Because what you've done then is that person will probably beat you up then. Because you're physically fighting them. If you get to the place, mm-hmm. just to go along. And that depends. Now, if a person is really, there are four kinds. One who's just a crazy person who is just a murderer, really, and will do anything violent to anybody. That kind of person is one of the four rapists.
Let's review those four.
Well, I don't know if I can remember them.
Well, that's all right.
One is that kind. One is a kind who is more involved with ego development and inability to express power and self-definition, which is the kind that I had, which the best thing to do is to talk. And you just talked to him, and I just was lucky I hit the right one.
Quantum passionate momentary kind of?
Yeah, I know, I can't remember.
Well, maybe that'll be something else we can talk later on about, too.
But there are different kinds, but the there's something too with, something about momentary. But anyway, that's an interesting thing because there's been such a strong movement about self-defense and knowing how to physically fight, and the police are saying, hey, you know, you are in a powerless situation. And at that point, use your mind rather than your body.
The rapist that Mark talked about that was in our town, you know, that's really unusual for, you know, a rapist to be in such a small town. But, you know, all the girls would walk around school going, well, if he comes up to me, I'll just, you know, I know this and I know that, you know, I've taken karate, I can take him on, you know. But, I mean, if you really, you know, think about that, there's no way.
Plus your adrenaline, just...
Yeah,
like who you are. Yeah, who you are. This is the thing that I never knew what I was gonna do. I thought of many things that I would do, and it's not what I did. One of the things I did is I was like this, and somehow, you know, I think, why didn't I do this in church? But anyway, I was like this, and it was a defense. It was like some part of me he wasn't touching. You know, it was like I hit a wall. But I didn't. I mean, I didn't plan that. And then other times, why didn't I do that? But it was, what had happened was because he verbally, he told me he had a gun, he would kill me. He had power. And at that point, I did a mental trip where I said, okay, I'll wait till another time. Because now you're powerful.
Did he know that your son was in the house or anything?
That happened, I didn't know that. And so that was another thing going through me. What if he does something to me, then what's he gonna do to Aaron? So I had a double thing about fear. And halfway through, he said, well, I said, I'm afraid. And he said, why are you afraid? Are you afraid your son might come in? And then I knew he knew Aaron was there, and then I got even more afraid. So he must have been watching the house. That's all I can think. Or we even wonder if he was in the house when we came home.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Did you notice anything weird when you came in the first place?
No. But I didn't walk through the whole house either. You know, I didn't check the closets or anything. So I don't know. And I also don't hear too well in this. Well, I hear all right, but I don't hear as well in this. So my perception of where noises are coming from is sometimes off. So I was telling the police he was doing such and so, and I realized the other day that, you know, he could have been over there, and I just heard it more with one of the ears. So he could have been in the house. I just didn't know.
Well, if he knew that you were in the bathroom, you said he was at the door.
Yeah.
When you opened the door, he'd almost have to be in the house.
Well, see, he came in, we found the window where he came in. Now, whether he'd come in that window before I came home and was hiding somewhere else in an old shower we had in the back room, or whether he did that quietly while I was in the tub when I heard the noises, you know, I don't know.
Well, maybe, like, he had been in the house before, and, like, he had planned this so that, like, he staked it out.
That could be. Also, sometimes rapists do a random thing. Our neighbors heard someone in their backyard two nights before. He could have just been casing the neighborhood and for a couple days, and then he goes on to another neighborhood. One of the fears, the main fear I had, is that he's going to come back. And it didn't matter to me that 95% of the rapists never return, because...
There's that 5%.
There's that 5%. But also, it would be incriminating to them. I'd see him again, someone else would be more aware. And they often do not return. They just go and do their thing and then go to somewhere else. Anyway.
Have any of you had training on rape resistance or some program to deal with it? And if so, what was that like? Any kind of sexual assault?
Really?
On sexual assault? Or, you got any? You haven't. I don't know that our church is doing anything in this area either, particularly, is it, anywhere?
The Lutheran had an article recently by a woman organist. It's just a couple of weeks
ago. Oh, yes, that's right.
But I didn't like the article because her main thing was the fighting. And to me, that's not necessarily always the case. So it's sort of like you could kill yourself because of the anger that you create. But you could also, you see, it gets so very complex. But it's not that there's a cut and dried answer. the main thing about the other thing you could do is be preventative. You know, places walk with someone. You know, make sure someone knows where you are. Don't think it's namby-pamby to have a friend go with you. To just be a little careful. That's really.
Are most rapes like planned, or are they just?
I don't know the most, but I think from what I've read, they're not planned. But most rapes are from people, either family or friends, in spouses, dates, inside the family, and they're never talked about. There are a lot of rapes that are really planned, like in the movies, but most of them just where you happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Can you think of any that shouldn't be talked about?
Any rape?
Yeah. Any abuse, sexual abuse that should not be talked
no.
about?
No. I think there are a lot of sexual abuses that would be very difficult to talk about. Some more so than others, like father, daughter, something like that. But I think that any of those should be talked about.
Who could you go to? Who could a teenager go to? We heard you had adult friend and you had a husband. Who could a teenager go to?
Most of the time they say you should go to another friend and talk to them first, or else another relative besides your parents.
If it's your parents. Mm-hmm. You mean doing it, or just any rape?
Well, anything really.
Other opinions?
I think like if it was in the home, like with relative or whatever, I think I'd find it easier to like go to a counselor, someone I didn't know, who was a professional in that field, you know, who knew something about it and who could, you know, to make it easier to communicate about it, and then maybe go to someone that you knew or something.
Mm-hmm. Just as long as it gets out.
Yeah.
Also, I agree with that, but I'd say if you went to a parent, they'd seem to spaz out more than you would.
You know, I'm 39 years old. This happened to me when I was 39. I was thinking it was before my birthday. I still haven't really talked to the cleaning with my parents. And well, I felt more concerned for how they're going to handle it. Mm-hmm. Yep. My dad got all upset, you know, and my mom didn't want to talk about it. And I was angry at them because they couldn't handle it, you know, where my friends could.
We did create a little bit of a family conflict because we uninvited her parents from a visit because they wanted to come and be with us and help. And we just decided that it wasn't a help for them to be there.
I felt I was going to have to take care of them more for having their baby. Yeah.
And now that was at 39 and 65, so, you know, if that were younger, it could...
Now, see, but that's different, you know, with every family. I think parents are sometimes very good friends.
Secondly, you were an adult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're dealing with an underage person, the whole story will change because even your involvement as far as reporting in that is going to have
the parents.
Parental involvement.
But it is true that if you feel you can't tell your parents, it's better to at least tell someone.
Yeah. What would be an illustration, Martha, of a person? What kind of professional person?
Like a rape counselor, someone, maybe just even a school counselor.
Someone who's
a
social worker.
You also may need medical attention, especially if you don't know the man too well.
Medical people, when they learn of abuse, they're required to assist you, aren't they? They must. And there's some
The person who was worse was the doctor. The nurse was really supportive. The doctor was
nurse dead. Was very supportive.
So you never know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don't give up though. Find someone who's cold.
See, I think one of the things too, that I think is sort of a hard edge, is that as you're growing up and start dating, there's sort of this competitive thing about sexuality and like on a date, how far should you go? And some of that is playful, you know, and you don't exactly say, well, you can go this far or that far. I think growing up with myself and friends, that there was sort of a way in which we males viewed it as a sport, and there was always somebody in a group who considered it was perfectly okay to go completely all the way, even against somebody's will. You know, like if you're saying no, you don't really mean no, you just can't come out and admit that you like it as a woman. And I think that there are a lot of dating situations that are just sort of fraught with that potential danger, and they call it a rape date on campuses, and I wouldn't know how to deal with that. I haven't had a date in so long, I wouldn't know what to do.
That's okay.
Yeah,
just
but
a couple months ago.
That's right. But I mean, a date where I didn't... Yeah, but I think that's a place where it's important to realize that there that you could get into a situation there, and if something bad occurred there, it shouldn't be. You still have to talk about that too, because it's important to heal. And I don't even know what needs to be sorted out in that situation, but that is an issue maybe.
Well,
because a lot of things happen there, and then nobody wants to talk about it because hey, you went out on the date, you think you feel guilty or something.
Going back to, like, who would you tell if that happened to you? Like he said, you might not want to tell your parents because they either spaz out or else if you tell them, they'd say, let's not say anything about it because they're afraid they'd lose some friends or something like that.
Then they get into their own image,
too. Their parents' image. Mm-hmm.
They're usually the rape crisis people. Almost every area has that working out of.
You can find it in the Yellow Pages often, too, where it'll be either
mental health.
Yeah.
You know that there are rape crisis people in your area? Is there somebody, do you know that?
They have stuff in our school. They have little bulletins and stuff.
I think I've seen one in ours.
One place to find out is at school, isn't it? You know who else knows?
Church.
Your pastor knows. Yes.
Church knows.
Your pastor knows where there's help. You may not want to tell your pastor. That may be a little difficult for you. But the pastor can tell you. But the pastor can put you in touch with